You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, and this is episode number 93. Merry Christmas, everybody. Welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven. And 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore. Ed, Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Howdy, folks. We're trying to get this going. We've had some hiccups the last 15 minutes or so. So hopefully this will maintain at least through the end of the recording.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, if it does, it's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah, well. If it does, it's a Christmas present, I guess, too.
Yes. Yeah. So speaking of which, unless you have banter, I don't have any banter keyed up. I don't have anything written down.
Let's make that our Christmas present to the folks that they don't have to listen to our banter.
That's right. They don't listen to us complain or gush over something. All right, right. Well, today we're looking at Superman's Christmas Adventure number 2 from DC Comics. This issue sports a cover date of December 1944, and it was a free giveaway at various department stores. And it is entitled Merry Christmas, Everybody. I couldn't find any credits online anywhere.
Nope.
I barely ran across a synopsis, which was from CBR.com, and all I've got is Lois and Clark team up with 7 magical gnomes in addition to Santa Claus and end up helping the war effort.
Okay. Slight correction. They called themselves dwarves in the story.
They did. Yes.
Not gnomes. And let me add that apparently there were 3 chains, I guess, that gave this out. Snellenberg's Market of Philadelphia, Kennedy's Boys Shop, which I believe was who gave out the book that we read last Christmas, entitled Superman's Christmas Adventure. And then there was an outlet at Happy Land. I have no idea. So
interesting.
I am looking at a Kenny's Boys shop.
I am too.
Scan. So
I feel like the Christmas Adventure, the first one in, what was that, 41, 42?
41.
I feel like it was also, there were more retail outlets and bigger ones that it was given out,
okay.
I feel like, but maybe that's why we couldn't find a lot on this one, other than the scans, because there's just not a lot known, because it wasn't given out that much.
To me, even more interesting was that for something like this, there was a 3-year gap before they did it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, in a way, you know, that would make me think, well, that first one must not have been successful. But then I'm thinking, well, but it was a giveaway. Does it have to be successful or, you know? So I don't know why there's a 3-year gap between now. After this, I think this is the last one. There was only 2.
Yeah.
So maybe what they started doing is using this idea in one of their regularly occurring books somewhere.
I know that because the way I found this synopsis, I found over on CBR.com, it was like a list of Superman and all his Christmas stories.
Oh, cool.
And
okay.
So this was the second one, and I think the third one won't happen until Action Comics number 93.
Okay.
Something like that. So
well, and that makes sense. I mean, he has 2 books that you could put a Christmas story into, so why
exactly?
Why do even though it's a handout, why go to all the expense of this when if you really want to do it, then just hand out that issue if you want to do a handout, you know.
Because it's a giveaway, I'm sure their marketing people before the first one, probably they predict a certain uptick in sales following that. And then if they don't get that, they don't hit that,
you don't do it again. Okay.
With the Superman comic being a Superman anthology book, that would be the perfect place for any holiday themed.
I would think.
Yeah. So
That's almost like a pre-made story for that particular issue. Whatever is closest to the holiday, we'll put that holiday story in that issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what'd you think of this one?
I I liked it insofar as I thought it was very representative of the time that it came out. I'm a lot more forgiving of Christmas stories far as the writing of the story, how it's put together and things like that. A lot more forgiving than the standard month over month kind of stories that are meant to keep people coming back and reading the book. It's a one-off. It's supposed to be more fun than, you know, I would think than the average story of whatever character. It doesn't matter what character.
Yeah.
You hit the themes, you know, Christmas would be happy and giving and grateful gifts for kids if you can get it in there, or helping someone, or, you know, I mean, there are those Christmas touchstones that if the story hits, then honestly, it did what that story was intended, and, you know, read it and move on to whatever the next issue is. It did what it was supposed to.
Yeah. I'll be interested how I feel about it after we start talking about it, because I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And
it was very much a product of its time.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And I mean, they made no bones about that. And I'll point out a couple things that I'm like, that was kind of, whatever the word, what kind of made me draw back a minute. I'm like,
even beyond that stuff, because there was some of that in there, but mm-hmm. I just didn't care for it. And the thing is, though, I know that there have been one or two other Superman stories that when we start the episode, I'm like, yeah, I didn't like this at all. And then once we start talking about it, and there are certain things that you notice that I didn't notice and blah, 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 by the end of the episode, I'm like, maybe I really did kind of like this one. But we'll see. We'll see how my opinion changes. But you want to go through it?
Sure. Sure. Starting off with the cover, like I say, mine is stamped Kennedy's Boy Shop. So that's where this giveaway was from. It's got a picture on the cover of Superman standing behind a very well-lit, and I guess those are candles, which is kind of frightening, Christmas tree, because there's a lot of candles making a lot of heat on that Christmas tree, which we can, I guess, still assume was a natural tree in 1944. I don't know that they started doing fake trees yet.
I think they did, but they sure as hell didn't look like real trees.
Okay. Oh, speaking of, I apologize. Here's a little bit of banter. Okay. Have you noticed, or have you seen what the newest Christmas tree for lazy people trend is?
No.
Or not trend, but it's a new device. Okay. You have all of these different trees that have foldable limbs and what have you. Okay. No. This is a bar with a big hoop on it, and you lower the hoop, and attached between the hoop and the top of the bar is all of your decorations. So as you lower the bar, it trees out with and it's got the small digital lights that you can control with a little wireless remote for different effects and different LEDs, colors and what have you. Yeah. But cool. it stores in a big plastic, soft plastic, like a wreath. It looks like a wreath holder.
Okay.
But when you unzip it, you erect the stand and you put it on top of the stand and pull it down like a skirt, and the tree is there.
I'll have to look for that. That sounds fun.
It is pretty interesing.
Yeah.
For 300 and some bucks, I didn't think it was that interesting.
Yeah. But, never mind. Yeah.
Well, I mean, look it up to see them do it, because it's really cool. You've got this big pole, right? And the circle, and they're like, oh, and da da da, and they're talking and they lower it, and it's like this tree is.
That's cool.
Like, okay. I got you there.
I'll have to look that up.
Okay, so Superman behind the Christmas tree, in front of the Christmas tree, probably it looks like maybe doing the sit on Santa's lap thing, or maybe he's telling stories, is Santa Kris Kringle, if you don't believe in Santa, whatever. At his feet are the presents, and across the bottom and slightly up the right-hand side of the cover, well, I'm sorry, Stephen's showing it there. For those of you that may be watching now, if you're listening to the podcast,
nobody's watching. We're not live streaming this.
Oh, well then, for those podcasting, you'll just have to take my word for it. As I look at our children, 2, 4, 6, 8 little children there being entertained by whatever Santa Claus is doing. Superman very much is taking a back role. He's not actively doing anything. Wow, come on. He's not handing out presents. He's just overseeing, I guess, or maybe he did something and then he's standing back to see the results of what he did. It's very much Santa and Christmas tree forward.
I love Santa's mustache.
He's got a good one. That is beyond porn.
Those are some major handlebars right there. Yeah. Normally, yep. I think nowadays, you know, the Santa Claus mustache just blends in with the beard. It's just a, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, it's that, just I like a covering. But yeah, here,
I like
here
this
it's
a lot.
Definitely separate. Mustache, yep. beard.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
And for those of you listening to the podcast, I did the International Sign Language for mustache and beard. It's, yeah.
He's got the mittens on. I mean, he's in full, not screwing around. He's got the boots, of course, but rarely do we see a Santa Claus these days, especially in a mall. Wearing mittens,
right? It's too hot. You don't need them because
I like it. I think it's a decent cover, but yeah, it's very Christmassy, which is what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, it definitely has all the earmarks of a Christmas. But even if it wasn't titled or anything, you would see it and think, "Oh,
here's a Christmas story."
Yep. I know who that is, and that means it's a Christmas story. The inside front cover has a sketch of. Partially of Superman, and then a thank you from in this one from Kennedy's makes me wonder the others if they just inserted the name up here at the top or if what was written was different also because it came from a different place.
It's a good question. Anything that is specific, well, the very end, I was going to say everything specific to Kennedy's is in all caps, but there's a couple times there in the paragraph where their name shows up and it's not.
Yeah. So I mean, just replacing that, which. I mean, they were wizards at this time. Type replacement stuff. Yep. It could be, but it would be a lot of work to use one and just put in the names wherever it belonged. But I could see him doing that.
What do you think Superman's trying to do there in that image?
I think if somebody caught him mid-flight and it's just a weird angle.
Looks to me like he's getting ready to do a karate kick to somebody's face.
Okay, he's doing some jujitsu or some kickboxing.
That's right.
He's at the gym practicing. This is what he does the night before Christmas. He has his workout.
Yeah.
Cuz of course all the thugs and everything they're trying to stay on the down low too. They got family and whatnot.
They don't want to be on the naughty list.
No. He goes and works out and gets that's how he gets his exercise.
Criminals the world. Well, criminals who believe in Christmas the world over take Christmas Eve off.
Right. Which, well, no, I wouldn't say it's probably most because, Christianity supposedly is half of all the people in the world, I think, claim to be Christians. So.
Well, and you consider all the people who, there's still tons of people who don't and still celebrate Christmas. So.
Right. Yeah. They still do the Christmas and tell the kids about Santa. I'm sorry. That was a. Maybe not a fair inference. Santa doesn't necessarily have anything to do with Christianity, so I apologize.
I'm the one that brought... When I said people who believe in Christmas, I was thinking Christians, so I brought it up, really.
You're absolutely right. There are people who are not admitted Christians, but they do trees and presents and Santa Claus whatnot. Okay, the splash page is a big Santa Claus with a sack thrown over his shoulder, and the sack is opened up. And we see in the sack various toys and Superman, or perhaps that's a toy of Superman. It could be either one. I mean, you can't really tell. There's nothing to me that distinctly says that that's a toy, but it could be. So
I think it's a doll. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then we get our little thing here says, Christmas comes but once a year. And when it does, we all want to be, we all want it to be a merry one. But just imagine a Christmas without toys. You can't. We can't. And neither can Superman. So when this dire calamity threatens, it's up to the Man of Steel to make sure that youngsters get their toys, even if he has to... Excuse me, guys. This copy is very
hard to read. It's hard to read, yeah.
He has to beat the Japanese fleet to do it, I guess? And only after Santa Claus has delivered the goods does Superman feel he can really say, Merry Christmas, everybody. Yeah, that doesn't look like the word beat, but
no,
I'm not sure what
it's
else.
Fight?
Has to fight the Japanese fleet? Yeah. Okay. So then we get into it. We start at the Daily Planet. We have the...
Let me just say real quick, it's kind of weird considering how everybody's talking about how this Christmas is going to be one of the hardest for everybody for a long time because of all the prices and everything going up and how there's going to be lots of kids in the world that won't have toys come Christmas. And they just need Superman to make them.
There you go. And also, those that have been listening to the show, keep in mind where we are in the book is about 2 to 3 years before when this actually comes out. So this 1944, this is hard into the U.S.'s involvement in World War II.
Yeah,
where we are in the regular books where we're covering, nothing has happened on our side of the planet. It's all been European and everything. So we're watching, we're concerned, and maybe we're building up to helping other countries as far as our economy and things like that. But we are not involved directly yet. And so it has not really been reflected in the books we're covering. Although in 1944 for the Christmas book, it is very heavily reflected that we're involved.
We're neck deep at this point.
Yeah. Like Stephen said, there's supply issues, perhaps. There's economy issues, you know, just flat out money issues. And all of that comes up as it should in 1944.
Yeah. And I think the main point of this book, other than it being a Christmas story, it's also telling us that, you know, if I think it's trying to tell children out there that, look, if you don't have a great Christmas this year, it's because of the war. We're trying to win this war. We have people donating metal and plastics and, you know, it's all that stuff is going toward the war. And so, we wish we had a Superman to help you out, but sorry.
And that's basically where the story starts. First, the Daily Planet, the one of the reporters and the Perry White. Are talking about the situation. And then we have a couple businessmen apparently talking about the situation. There are toys in the background, so they must be toy manufacturers or children's store owners, children's toy owners or something like that. So everybody is letting us know, not that we would need reminded if we were living and had bought the book then.
These toy manufacturers are specifically saying, I mean, the one guy's going, factories are too busy making war materials to make as many toys as they used to.
Then we cut to a supply plane or a transport plane, excuse me, over the Pacific. It's going through a storm and having a rough time of it. Inside on the aircraft themselves are Lois and Clark. They are journeying, I assume, to a locale, I guess, in the Pacific because of the war. It said that they're covering their war correspondents in the Pacific. So maybe they're just island hopping from either to the front or maybe they're on their way back home after having covered that. Is that inferred? I sent them a cable. They should get back in time. So, yeah, they're probably coming home from the Pacific, caught in this transport plane that gets caught in a storm. As soon as I saw that, I knew where the story was headed.
Yeah.
They're in the plane. The plane is in a storm. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, well, that plane's going down.
That's,
know, even worse, it's going to go down potentially somewhere in the Pacific that nobody knows or something like that, you know. Now, that's not quite what happens.
No.
Interestingly enough.
The first part was correct. The second part, even the second part, landing somewhere where nobody might. But beyond that, something different happens.
Yeah, it's like a yes, but not. Exactly. Lois is not comfortable in her seat being buffeted around by the storm, which I can understand. So she decides to get up and walk around in the plane while it's being buffeted around, which I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand people even letting her do that because, I mean, that is, So she does that and at one point gets thrown across the plane into one of the doors that's in the fuselage for the passengers. Knocking the door open, which is very interesting because the doors open in, they don't open out. So if you hit it, how is it going to, you're just going to force it into the frame if you hit it. Anyways, so she's buffeted out of the plane because the door opens and she falls out. Just like that, Clark jumps after her. And I'm sure he's thinking, oh shit, how am I going to do this one? You know, so, now you can see she does have a parachute on, although it looks bad. It looks weird whenever you see her.
Yeah, they say that her pack, let's see, Lois hadn't fastened her pack securely. Right. They're all wearing parachutes in the plane, but apparently she just didn't.
She was lazy, when she put it on, she was not supervised, which I thought they usually do, too, to make sure that you put, you know, this is the military. They're not going to let just people do whatever. You have to follow all the rules, even if you're a civilian.
We've all seen those movies where the one guy puts on the pack, the other guy next to him putting on his pack, and then they each check each other out to make sure it's all done correctly.
Because if, as we find out here, if it's not fastened correctly, it doesn't work.
That's really the point of this entire story. Make sure your buddy checks your chute before you jump out of a plane.
Because, excuse me, guys, let me move.
The cat.
The cat here, the same one that puked a minute ago.
Oh, fun.
Stay down, baby. Here, let me move this so you can get up there. Now you can get up there and look out the window. So she's fallen out of the plane. Clark jumps after her, but we find out that Lois's chute doesn't open. So she starts falling much faster than Clark because his is correct and it does open. So now Clark is like, well, you know, I can still save her, but it has to be a Superman. So he undoes himself and gets out of all his regular clothes. Fortunately, the fall, I guess, the fright, Lois has passed out. So Superman is able to fly. Fortunately grabs her just before she hits the ground. Makes me kind of worried about the whiplash that must be inherent in that.
We talked about this a few episodes back. That's always drove me crazy. There was a time where it didn't matter whatever it was, TV, movie, comic book, somebody falls from a great height. As long as you catch them within inches of them hitting the ground, they're fine.
Mm-hmm. Because hitting the ground is the only thing to worry about.
Yeah.
Now I will say, at one point in the Spider-Man comic book, they addressed that.
Yes, they did. Very much so.
Yes. So that's a spoiler for any of you that are haven't read Spider-Man in the, I guess it would be in a Silver Age in the, I don't know, somewhere in the 100s, I think. They do address the fact that, oh, somebody's falling. Spidey webs them really quick and
snap.
Clark has time after he's rescued Lois to go back and find his clothes wherever the hell they are, because they're still attached to that parachute that has blown who knows where. The fact that the parachute would maintain and fall directly on that island and not be blown out to sea somewhere is pretty remarkable, but especially with nobody in it. There's no weight.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
Hi, I'm Eric, host of the Long Box Review podcast. I love comic books so much that I started Long Box Review to celebrate my love for them and connect with others who share my passion. Each month, I critique the comics I've read and present other topics such as spotlights on specific issues, my comics history, The Legion Project with Peter Rios, where we discuss the Legion of Superheroes, and so much more. Additionally, the Long Box Review podcast feed includes The Gutters, my audio journal, and Center Seat, my Star Trek podcast. The Long Box Review website also examines comic books outside of the podcast, such as the series 52, Justice, and others. Please join me as I celebrate nearly 50 years of comic book reading and over 15 years of podcasting. You can visit longboxreview.com for more information. And thanks for listening.
Do you love podcasting but hate editing? Do you have a number of episodes recorded but just can't find the time to get them edited and ready for release? Do you need help and you're not sure what to do? Well, come talk to me. My name is Stephen Orr. I have over a decade of experience recording and editing my own podcasts, and I want to put those skills to work for you. I can remove that background noise. I can reduce silences. I'll remove all of your ums and your uhs, as well as your throat clearing, sneezes, and coughs and such. And I can even add your music and whatnot. And hey, my prices are quite reasonable. Check out edityourpod.com to get started. That's edityourpod.com. Or just reach out to me directly. Email edityourpod@gmail.com. Tell me what you need, and I'll tell you how I can help. And more importantly, I'll quote you a cost. edityourpod.com. Get started today.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
I don't know if they, I feel like they, I don't, I know we've talked about this before too, but there was a time where they established that he has a pocket in the back of his cape, and that's where he stashes his civilian clothes. I don't know when that's established, and I don't think it's been established yet.
Oh, but if it has been established. So what you're saying is, he's while got in his, a parachute, he takes his clothes off, he folds them up, he puts them in his cape, he flies, lands, Yeah, no, I don't see it.
And the pack, the parachute, it's all there in that cape.
He took everything off and dumped it to and it's gone. But however, he's we realize we're nitpicking, but it's fun. Just it's something you notice because it doesn't seem logical, and that's why we point stuff like that out. But
the thing is, the Superman today, I don't know if this, I can't remember if, I don't think the Golden Age Superman is quite as fast as the Superman of today.
Right.
He's still pretty fast. For if it was today's Superman, it would be completely believable for him to just let that stuff drop, get Lois to the ground. He would be able to just fly up there, find everything in super fast speed and get back down and dress. That for today's Superman, that would be a believable.
Or even fly home and get him a change.
Exactly.
And come back.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
So they land, and the last panel on this page is kind of interesting because we see Lois and Clark talking, but they're talking in the distance away from us, and they're just silhouettes in amongst trees. So you can they're letting you know that this is a tropical Pacific island that they have landed on. In the forefront, though, are three little, I don't know, I'll say dudes. I don't know that they're dudes, but I don't have another word for them. And they're dressed weirdly, and they have weird little hats. So they're something.
Giant big ears, big noses.
Maybe that's the starting of the Christmassy part of the story. They could be some kind of Christmassy creature, an elf or something like that, maybe. But they're watching Lois and Clark deeper in the woods. So they don't know yet, but we know that Lois and Clark are being watched. They continue to talk, Lois and Clark, until these creatures make themselves known, and they start saying funny things, and they start quipping. But first, they checked to make sure that Lois and Clark were English speaking. They say American, but other peoples would speak English as well. They don't have to be American, and vice versa. Yeah. But because as Clark is talking, somebody asks about baseball. And Clark answers back, understanding the question, and they're like, oh, okay, you do speak the same language I do, which turns out is English, and this little creature is like, oh, they're okay, guys, they're Americans, as opposed, I guess, to being the Japanese, which, yes, we find out later on, but right now, your inference would have to be World War II, Pacific Islands, they must be worried about the Japanese, but it didn't come out until later. So now the creatures, there's still two, four, six, eight, nine here eventually. They start coming out of the woodwork. I guess they all hang out together. They got nothing else to do on this island, and they just hang out together. But we find out that these are American dwarves. I don't know. That's what they are. And their names are much like the all the reindeer have names. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's nine of these guys. They are Bumble, Stumble, Fumble, Grumble, Tumble, Rumble, Mumble, Jumble, and Mahoney. I don't know what happened there. I guess he's Rudolph. Although we never see him, so we don't. Distinctly Mahoney to see if he has like a big alcoholic's red nose, which. That's about the only way real people would get a red nose is if they have that condition from consuming too much alcohol. And if that's offensive to folks, I'm sorry, but it is kind of factual. When you're a long time, men in particular, a long time alcoholic, you have the veinage in your nose and you get a big red nose. Sorry. Lois and Clark introduce themselves, say hello to the boys, and she says hello, and they say, she sing says, songy, and...
Yeah, she says, hello, boys!
It puts me in mind of the, is it the Three Stooges? Were they hello in harmony?
Hello.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of when I saw that. Now we just, we have just general, I think, so far. The next several panels, the two sides, the dwarves and Lois and Clark, just kind of mixing and mingling.
I do want to say, I don't want to say concerned or worried. I'd like to know what they mean by dwarfs. I'll just say that because Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the Disney movie, did come out in 1937. So we have seen seven dwarfs with funny names.
And Lois makes a reference to that.
Yeah.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. So
at the same time, I did read that little people at the time were called dwarfs.
Mm-hmm.
And so none of these dwarfs throughout the entire story do anything, I don't know, Matt. You just expect if they were, you know, dwarfs like you would see in the Lord of the Rings or something,
right,
that there would be some sort of magical thing around them. But they're just not. They simply, they're American dwarfs who, what does this guy say? Before the war, we used to read those travel ads that said, live on an island in the calm Pacific. Leave behind the cares and hustle and bustle of everyday life. And so they tried it and they're still there. So, yeah.
And apparently they're all male.
Yeah.
Well, on this panel, there might be a female, but.
Yeah, we have,
We don't know.
Yeah.
On the next page, though, they do make a reference to the word gnome. So we'll sing gnome, sweet gnome, which is interesting because they've already described themselves as being dwarves, but now potentially they're saying that they're gnomes.
Yeah.
Which I pretty standardly think gnomes have some kind of extraordinary abilities. I know they're not the dwarves, the unfortunate term for people of smaller stature, they would just be regular people. But then the dwarves, maybe dwarves haven't been used in fantasy literature up to this point too much to have any kind of magical powers, so maybe that's why they didn't do that. I can't think of any book from prior to 1944 that somebody would have read that had magical dwarves and things like that. Because I think, even the Tolkien stuff, the dwarves weren't magical. They were just small people. And that was in that came out in the late 40s, early 50s, I think, that his stuff. So, yeah. So we find out that... They are aware that Christmas time is, the dwarves are aware that Christmas time is coming. And Lois and Clark have made mention of shortages of toys for children. If they get back, that's kind of the thing that they'll face. They'll have to worry about the fact that wartime materials and time and what have you have shorted the availability of toys for children for Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, the dwarves tell them, well, you know, why don't you make your own? And Lois and Clark are like, well, you know, that's a good idea, but with what? We have nothing here. And they're told, if you can assemble a plane and know how to pilot one, you might be home in time after all. And Lois thinks, a plane? What are you talking about? So now we find out that these dwarves have been up to more than just hanging out on the island. They have been... doing their own pro-American wartime activities.
Yeah.
And that is, they have been drawing Japanese, particularly planes, near the island, getting them to land on the island, and then trashing the plane so that the plane can't leave the island. What they do with the pilots never really comes up, which maybe is good, you know. And there are a couple other situations on in the story where maybe that's good that we just don't address that because it, yeah. So here, when we see, you know, there's a panel here that shows they've kind of crested a little hill, and you can see down in the next, what we here in West Virginia would call a holler, is a a bunch of planes, and they're piled and stacked up. You can't see all of it, but you can see some wings and tails and what, to get the feeling of what they're saying. We like to do our bit too, you see. Mist like clouds. This is one of the dwarves speaking to Clark, explaining this plain graveyard, in essence, that is on this island in the middle of the Pacific. Mist like clouds over the island, which we did see at the very beginning. The transport plane encountered this, essentially. They just wrote it like just a storm. But maybe it's the storm attached to this island, which now, mist-like clouds over the island always keep us hidden. Huh. I wonder if they do that. I wonder if they have some kind of hokey-pokey that,
Maybe.
Grumble can speak Japanese, and he sends out a fake emergency call. And when a Jap plane, that's one of those unfortunate, we're in the middle of war.
That's what they said.
The Japanese are on the other side, so they're not going to be spoken about or looked at favorably. As you would expect in any war, no explanation to try to say that it's right, just the explanation of, I'm pretty sure that that has happened hundreds of thousands of times in human history, that you're at war and the other side. There, you have to do something to maintain that they are the enemy, so you can't be nice to them. So.
Right. And not that it makes it right, but the Japanese refer to us as barbarians and heathens. And,
all kinds of stuff, So, a jet plane tries to land for a rescue. We pull wires on the landing strip that trip his plane, and he crashes. Good. And there's your favorite.
Hey. Good, eh?
So, now, so they talk it out a little bit more here. And the very first thing that occurred to me was, well, what do you do with the prisoners? Because every plane will have at least one, if not more, depending on what kind of plane it is. I mean, even some of the fighter-sized planes had 2 to 4 people in them doing different things, depending on what the plane's job was. But it was the same size, roughly, as the Zeros, roughly.
I don't think any of those pilots or anybody on the planes got off that island alive.
I don't either. I'll just say that they ate them, which would be probably the kindest.
Gross.
That'd be the kindest thing that they could do. I mean, you're on this island. We haven't seen animals. You need protein.
That's true. How are they getting by? How are they sustaining?
And they don't look particularly starved, so they're doing relatively well. You know, they're all conversant. They're playing. So sorry. Lois gets the idea that the planes might be busted up, but maybe there is a working radio in one of them. Oh, no, I'm sorry. She uses the dwarf's radio. They already have a working radio because that's how they get the Japanese to come down, by using the fake Japanese come help me. So she calls Superman because Superman can help. Let me take a look here. Superman can help fix a plane so they can get home. Which doesn't make sense, because if he gets there, he could just fly him home. Superman will fix everything.
Everything.
So Clark is thinking, oh, crap. So now I'm Clark, but I need to be Superman, but nobody can know. And so he's over here to the side figuring. He comes up with an idea, an island. Okay. They need protein. They need food. So Clark is like, well, we can't do anything just standing around. I'll try to do something, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to go out here and fish for us to get us some food. I notice a boat, and I'll take it out off the island a little bit and do some fishing. So he does. He goes out there, and he once again changes into Superman and uses his clothes to make a dummy with a fishing rod in the boat. And I can only assume that he must have anchored the boat, although that didn't come up, because the boat would just wash right in. And too much specific for the story. Too much Pacific for the story.
Oh, hello.
So he sets up a dummy fisherman out in the water there away, so they can't tell. Although anybody watching for any amount of time would be like, that dude's not moved at all. And however long I've been watching, what's he doing? Then he flies in. We have a cute little panel of some of the dwarves debating what that is. Some of the terminology they use is like street kind of, it strikes me as street Italian kind of slang that they have been using at times. Mopes is what one dwarf refers to the others when they're talking about Superman. There have been a couple other words thrown in there also. So
yeah,
I'm like not sure.
Like they're a Bowery Boy or whatever they're called. Yeah, or the I'm News not Boys. Sure
if,
or, yeah.
Yeah, if that's what it's intended or the person who did the scripting for it didn't really think about it one way or the other, just threw out words that they knew or so. I'm not sure.
But this part here where they're seeing Superman, it's definitely because the one guy goes, "Is that a plane?" And then the second guy goes, "Is that a Boyd?"
Boyd, B-O-I-D, Boyd.
B-O-I-D, so, yeah.
So Superman comes down and starts helping with the plane. Now, see here, they start working on the plane, but not to fix the plane. They've decided to use the plane to make toys. Somewhere along the way, the getting off of the island became helping the poor children in war-torn U.S.
Yeah, and they have to make tools as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that change went. It might have subtly changed in their conversation. I don't remember picking up on it distinctly. So, but yeah, Superman comes and he uses the metal from the plane to fabricate tools that he then hands out, and they and he start making toys out of the different components of the aircraft, I suppose mainly the metal.
See, now, if they had made these gnomes or dwarfs or whatever, if they had made them like Santa's elves who were retired and they were retiring and they retired in the Pacific before the whole war nonsense happened,
heck yeah.
This would make a lot more sense, you know, logical sense.
Right, but yeah.
But here's elves who are, they've spent their life, they're professional toy makers, you know, and so that would make a lot more sense.
That would make a lot of sense. And they just got tired of the winters. Not that they didn't want to make toys anymore, but the winter is just too much.
Yeah, they want to retire somewhere warm.
Right. They retired warm and they're like, oh, look, we get to make toys again.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would have been a much more entertaining, I guess, kind of story or a much more rewarding kind of story.
Yeah.
We need to go back to 44 and suggest that. Hey, all right. You guys, try it like this.
Yeah. And they'd go, oh my gosh, you're geniuses.
Why didn't we think of that? Yeah, right. Because I know you're under pressure and you just got to hammer these out, pun intended. And so, yeah.
Hey-o!
That's two.
I'm your Ed McMahon.
Yeah, that's two. There we go. Yeah. Merry Christmas. Yeah, Bastages. That's what my little thing here down here says.
Yeah.
Okay, so Superman is heavily involved, and we start to see a stack of toys now. We have Superman and Lois. We have various dwarves, and we start to have all of these different toys, boats and planes, and here's a model. Either that's a model house, or it could be a caboose over here to the side. We have what looks to be a sled over here. Just some examples. There's some humor in it. They've made a truck pulling various carts like a train, but a truck, and it runs into one of the dwarves in a humorous panel. Somehow they have acquired or created paint. I'm not sure how that one works, but they're painting everything. Now everything is kind of an olive drabby kind of paint. So maybe they just scraped it off the planes and mixed it with water. So I don't know, who knows, but. So there's some humor with paint coming around there. Some physical humor here with one of the dwarves makes you know how the clocks have all the moving parts when it strikes the hour and whatever and does all these things. Well, he's made some kind of toy that has people hammering and he falls into the midst of it while they're hammering, showing, I guess, that he has done something good, but he accidentally trips into it. And
what's he saying?
Ouch. Get me out of here. I'm being moited. I wonder if that's the same guy that thought it was a Boyd.
Must be.
He's got that accent. So they finish up. Superman finishes up using his superpower, the last of the toys. He finishes making them and painting them and everything we see assembling. Then he takes off. Not long after, Superman locates an empty freighter homeward bound after having delivered her cargo of war goods. So now they have finished making the toys. Now they need to find a way to transport transport the toys from the island to the U.S. Superman goes out looking, finds a freighter. He commandeers the freighter, but he does discuss it with them, and they're like, "Yeah, sure, we'll do that. That's not a problem." On the way back, he remembers, "Oh yeah, as Clark, I've been fishing. I need to get me some fish to bring back to show that I actually did something as Clark." So he dives down and says, "Come on, little fish, you're going to be Clark Kent's alibi." So he's killing the fish in order to cover for himself. That's okay. They move the toys and everything on board. Lois and Clark say their goodbyes, and the dwarves are saddened by Lois and Clark leaving. The new members of their quote-unquote clan, and now they have to leave.
Lois is crying, too. She's got big old tears dripping out of her eyes.
She does, yes. You'll come back someday, won't you promise? And she says, yes, we promise. So, it just, you know, the typical kind of scene for something. They've all done something fulfilling and good, and now that has to break up. That team that did that has to break up. So, finally, though, really to hammer home that this is a Christmas story, we switch, we're told, meantime at the North Pole home of Santa Claus Toy Factory. So, right to the source now. Santa is being affected by lack of materials as well. It's struck the North Pole. They're running out of things to make toys out of, and so the toy making is starting to slack also. So, Santa Claus is finding things to disassemble, furniture and whatnot.
I do like this part. I like how basically he just starts destroying everything around them because, you know, they've got to make these toys.
Exactly.
So,
yep.
I love it. Yeah.
At first he starts here with furniture. That's a little bit later in the story. And you see that things are so tough that Santa is having to cannibalize things in order to have materials to make toys.
Yep.
We go back to the freighter where Lois and Clark are subjected to a torpedo attack of the freighter. There's only one reason that the freighter would be attacked via torpedo, and we see that. We see a very unfortunately drawn Japanese naval person giving the order to fire again on the freighter. Superman, Clark, of course, excuses himself. What does he do? He doesn't really say. In the ensuing confusion, Clark switches. So now, in order to get the story going, we just do it. We don't try to explain.
I bet they're at a point now where they're just like, we're tired of trying to. I mean, they did with the whole him in the fishing boat, but that's so he could be Superman for a long period of time on an isolated island where Clark's supposed to be as well. But yeah, I'm sure they've just gotten over the fact where they know that he's going to do something to change. So let's just make him change.
Right. Let's just say he does it. Yeah. So he grabs this next torpedo, turns it around, and sinks the Japanese sub with, I don't know, dozens, maybe hundreds of people on board. Not addressing what happens. Okay, we're at war. They're the enemy. They're less than human. Okay, I got you. Plus, also, I say that, but obviously, what happens to those people on these different things is not the point of the story. So.
Yeah.
It's highly likely that it would not be addressed because it need not be to further the story. But it is rather, by the end of the story, there have been probably several hundred people that Superman is directly responsible for killing.
War is hell.
That's the bottom line. So,
and we do have Superman using a racially insensitive name for the Japanese in that second panel.
Which I'm not going to repeat for you guys. We'll just say it is not the word Jap, but it is similar.
Yep.
Three letters rhymes with Jap. No, it doesn't really rhyme with Jap, but yeah. So after he has done that, he notices that there also now are a couple zeros that are zeroing in on, that's three.
See what Hey-o!
Yeah. Okay. On the, whatever kind of ship that's carrying the
freighter,
toys.
Freighter.
So now he goes up and he's got to take out the two planes before they who knows what they would have them do. Maybe they were going to torpedo bomb them. Maybe they were the kamikaze planes. I don't know what these people who wrote the story had in mind necessarily, but something was going to happen.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
Do you like comic books? What about comic books from the 70s? Well, how about sword and sorcery comic books from the 70s that feature a certain barbarian from Sumeria who seems to spend most of his time wandering the earth, scoring with babes, and fighting wizards and monsters and such? If all of that sounds fantastic, then come explore the Hyborian Age and tread the jeweled thrones of Earth with me, Stephen Orr, and the Hither Came Conan podcast. Together we'll look at Conan the Barbarian, the Marvel Comics series that began in 1970, one issue at a time, along with any other Conan comics I can get my hands on. Subscribe to Hither Came Conan now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Batman Nightcast is back with new episodes every month.
This time, we're covering the Dark Knight stories we overlooked in previous iterations of this show.
Anyway, I'm Chris Franklin.
And I'm Ryan Daly.
Join us as we find our joy with Batman Comics chronicling the Caped Crusader's first adventures with the Boy Wonder.
Thrill as we review the fiendish plots of a who's who of villains like Poison Ivy, Killer Croc, Gentleman Ghost, and Clayface 3.
If this is a bit, I don't understand it.
Hey kids, comics by legendary creators Don Newton, Neil Adams, Marshall Rogers, and Bill Sienkiewicz.
Plus, the single greatest Batman story ever told.
It all comes back to Batman Nightcast.
I don't know what's happening right now.
New episodes every month.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire & Water Podcast Network.
Wanna make something of it?
Did you fall on your head?
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
Superman takes care of one plane, and in doing that, frightens off the other plane. He sees it hightailing somewhere, and of course, anyone with any kind of military acumen would follow that plane to see where it came from, because it has to come from somewhere. Is there a base? We're at war. Superman knows that. Is there a base I can take care of? Is there, you know, something else that I can do my part in the war?
Yeah.
And take care of the enemy. So he follows the plane in, sees that it has come off of a what do they call it here? A carrier escort, which is a carrier and then other types of ships, whether they be destroyers or cruisers or other auxiliary ships. Here he says it's a destroyer escort. And I don't know if the Japanese used those same methodologies as far as their naval convoys.
Right,
I know the U.S., usually it was a carrier and two destroyers for a small convoy, and then depending, it grew out from there. But there were typically two destroyers to protect the aircraft carrier. I don't know if the Japanese used those same configurations or not. But Superman follows it in. One of the destroyers, because we see that there are at least three boats here in another panel. One of the destroyers is trying to take out Superman. He dissuades them from doing that. He messes up the guns. And then he flies away from all of the ships and then flies at them and through the ships at the waterline.
That's cool.
Sinking them. A very effective way. He's lucky they were kind of lined up like that. But yeah, And that's what the panel shows. It's got three ships, and you see the streaking line right at the waterline penetrating each of the ships. So, three ships, a submarine, and at least one Zero. Many hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And that, as they say, is that, Superman says. And that's the last we see. We don't see anything about survivors or ships coming to rescue. Nothing. He attacks these vessels because they attacked his people on the toy ship, destroys them to where they don't attack anymore, and leaves it. That's the story.
Something else I thought about, I think something that folks need to understand about books at this time, because we were right in the middle of the war. Soldiers, our American soldiers overseas, whether in the Pacific or the European front, they read a lot of these comic books. These comic books were being shipped to them in packet, you know, care packages and whatnot. And so a lot of soldiers read these comics. And so for a soldier to be, you know, in the Pacific reading this page, they're like, hell yeah, Superman, go. So a lot of this, a lot of this is just, you know, it's there to help keep people's moods up, you know, and feel good about things, I guess.
Dare call it propaganda?
Yeah, yeah, propaganda. That's the word. Yep.
And yeah, you're right. The last thing that you want your army in forward positions to see is themselves losing in the comic books.
Yeah.
That's not, yeah. So,
yeah.
All right, we go back to Santa's factory. Things are dire. Santa is tearing up all the furniture that he has to make toys, and the dwarves, elves, whatever his helpers are in this book. I don't know. They look very similar, actually, to the dwarves we saw on the island. Not exactly, but. Santa's like, okay, we'll start tearing down the building that we're building the toys in. The partitions are made of wood. Lend me a hand, knock out the walls. So now they have come to using the very structures that they're making the toys in to have material to make toys.
That's the sacrifice that Santa Claus is making for the war effort, ultimately.
Indeed. Cut back to the freighter. They realize that the freighter is no longer sinking because, remember, to start everything off, it got hit by a torpedo.
Yeah.
So Superman has cleaned things, fixed whatever had to be done. The ship is now seaworthy. He goes back up top, changes back to Clark. He and Lois, interesting, I don't know that really you see this happen too often in any of the books, but in back-to-back panels, Lois is talking to Clark. And then in the next panel, now Clark gave his excuse, but in the next panel, Lois is met by Superman. Usually there is something that happens. Seldom will it be back-to-back panels, which in my mind denote a very short period of time between them.
You would think.
So yeah, it's Lois and Clark in one, and the very next panel is Lois and Superman. So he comes up.
And if you look at, just think of the time, you look at those four panels, and at least because from that first panel where he's fixing the ship to the second panel where he and Lois are talking, there's several days between those two panels.
Right. It tells us that. Right.
And then there are, good Lord, however long it would take Superman to fly all that stuff from the ship to the North Pole between that third and the fourth panel.
Right. Yeah. So those have time, but there is no time denoted between the second and third.
No, I picture Clark going, oh, I don't feel very well. I've got to go to my cabin, walks out of the room, and then walks directly back in as Superman.
Right.
Like they just passed in the hallway.
So the torpedoing of the freighter has slowed them down. They're not going to be able to get their toys to the kids in the U.S. in time. They're going to miss Christmas. So that's why Superman has come back, is his job is not done. He still needs to get the toys so that they can be delivered, but he can't do that himself. He is not that good, but there is somebody who is that good. So he gathers up the toys that they have made on the island that was being transported by the freighter, and he flies them directly to Santa Claus at the North Pole. Between these toys and the toys that they have manufactured, they have managed to manufacture, there are enough toys.
That's a lot of toys.
So Superman rescued Christmas now.
Yes.
And so he and Santa are getting ready to get everything together, get the sleigh going and the reindeer hooked up and loaded with the toys so that he can deliver them. Now here, that second panel, what is the name, the first name of that reindeer that Santa says? Can you see it?
Donder.
Yeah, no. It's Donner.
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 I wondered about that myself the first time I read it. I thought,
just to be sure that I had not heard it wrong my whole life, I looked it up, and everything I saw said D-O-N-N-E-R.
Yep.
So how Donder could slip by editorial.
No.
And I haven't noticed any other misspellings or anything to be like, oh, well, they just didn't pay attention. No. Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. Donder. Yeah. So let's see what happens. Okay. Santa tells Superman, well, we're still short. I mean, I definitely appreciate what you did, but there's still not enough. And Superman's like, oh no, this isn't everything we had on the boat. This was just my first handful.
Chill, brother. I got you.
I got you, man. So he, Superman goes back to the tanker and brings more toys. Santa loads up the sleigh here. I thought that there had been a problem there too, but I guess not. It's going to be, yeah. Okay. Maybe I'm conflating that with another story I've recently read or something. But so, Superman doesn't guide him or anything. Okay. No, I'm not sure why I was thinking that. So Superman has done his bit. He's gotten Santa enough toys to give all the little good girls and boys up on the housetop. Yeah, sorry. Toys. We see Superman flying away as we see Santa and the reindeer flying through on one panel. More just really Christmassy, you know, so that you know for sure it's Christmas. Yeah. Now we've seen Santa and his reindeer and the sleigh. With the big sack of toys or what have you. Maybe there are other gifts in there too, on the back of the sleigh. A la the Grinch, you know, like when the Grinch is trying to take all of the toys home and you got this big
giant
and this
sack,
little teeny sleigh that he's pulling them
and
in.
And that was just one town that the Grinch took the presents from.
Yeah, really. Yeah. You know, I believe that's based on a written story. He wrote a sequel to that. Did you know that?
Dr. Seuss did?
Uh-huh.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a sequel story that he wrote to that, too. I think he never released it before he died or something like that. I believe it's been released since
then. It's been released posthumously, I think that's what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. I'll have to look that up.
Okay, so we have an image here of Santa breaking into someone's... stealing into someone's... sneaking into someone's... Yeah, I'm not sure how you could put it nicely, but he's delivering the toys while everyone else in the house is asleep. I always wonder, too, if he, like, juiced them somehow to make sure they stayed asleep so that
Good question.
In case he ever made noise or anything, you know?
There was a couple of years in a row, there was a holiday special on NBC or something about these, just recently, like within the last 15, 20 years, was these two elves that were part of, you know, like basically they set up this thing where they have this, the first team that goes into a house before Santa Claus gets there. And they make sure everything is they make sure the kids are asleep. They have all these different things that they can do and all these like James Bond type gadgets and stuff that get it ready for Santa Claus.
Okay.
Rhonda, do you remember the name of that? She remembers. She doesn't remember the name, so. But
the name of the Christmas specials that Stephen is desperately searching for is Prep and Landing.
Yeah, and you would think, something like that would almost have to be possible.
Yeah.
To make sure people are asleep before Santa gets there, because that's a big thing, you know?
Now, there was a time back when I was writing stuff, I didn't do anything... in regard to how Santa Claus gets in and out, how he breaks in. But I had created a room in the North Pole that they called the sleigh that had doors inside that would break the dimensional boundaries. So he just goes through a door and he's in somebody's house.
Okay.
Boom, 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 puts it down, goes. And so that's how he can, and it's outside of time.
Sure.
So he spends like a year there doing that, but it all happens in the same night.
One night. Yeah. Well, and that would explain how he can go all around the world in 24 hours or less. Very creative, Mr. Writer Man. Well, it is. Okay. So we cut back to Lois and Clark. They're just getting off of the freighter, talking a little bit about Christmas. The captain of the freighter bids him a fond adieu, and
he invites him to their Christmas party.
On the freighter, I guess.
Yeah.
And this is where Clark takes the opportunity to give us the theme of the entire book. Clark says, "So would millions of others who are spending Christmas at sea, in foxholes, or in dank jungles, but they're doing it gladly because they're doing it for the right of all peoples to celebrate all the Christmases to come. Lois says, so that's all of us. Wish all of them Merry Christmas. There you go. Yep.
Yeah.
So very, very, it didn't necessarily start out that way. Falling from the plane, getting onto a tropical island, even meeting the dwarves. But that's about the first 20% or maybe third of the story. But then after that, it really kicks in hard to the Christmassy aspect. I mean, they mentioned it at the very beginning of the story, but that talking heads don't really, I don't think, add to the theme in a visual medium.
Yeah.
So we didn't see that until Lois and Clark decided to make toys because, and then everything just kind of snowballed from there. That after that is when we saw the actual North Pole and Santa to see it was affecting them as well. And then, about a third of a story of setup. And then, boy, they got into the Christmas and just kept that Christmas theme going all the way to the end. Even when Lois and Clark are at this party, which doesn't look like a Christmas party at all, but the sentiments are still very Christmas at wartime.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I will say, now that we have gone through it, I don't, obviously it's not my favorite of the Superman tales. I did enjoy it this time going through it. There were moments in there that I was like, okay, yeah, I think you said it best at the beginning, for its time, it's a pretty decent Christmas story.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, you've got to keep in mind that, like I said, in order to facilitate war, there has to be an enemy. And if there is an enemy, then they're not going to be thought or spoken of well. That's kind of the concept behind classifying someone as enemy. Now, you know, whatever, all the other bad, evil extents of that, all of the other nasty things we did to people within our borders, even though we were supposed to be defending people outside our border, you know.
Yeah.
All of that is documented. All of that has been judged right or wrong. I agree or disagree with those judgments, that it doesn't matter in the big scheme of things. And it certainly doesn't matter with what someone is trying to do with a creation of fiction.
Yep.
They have a point and they have a story that they're trying to get across. I'll read it and I'll decide whether I like it or not based on what they do in the story. This one, it was okay. Again, you know, it's wartime and there are some harshities, if that's a word, in there. Okay. They're there. They're part of the story. I don't think that they took away enough that I would have to say, oh, that was just a bad story. I didn't enjoy it or what, you know. Now, I will say, here lately, for whatever reason, in other readings that I have been doing, I seem to have run across time periods when other Christmas stories were coming out in what I'm reading. So the past week or so, I've read probably four or five Christmas stories across the different eras and things that I'm reading just by happenstance. It just turned out that way. So I'm kind of more in that mood than perhaps I normally would be because I have run across that theme frequently. So, I like that it a Christmas story starting out on a jungle island in the Pacific. That's kind of a different kind of start for it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but compare it to the first Superman's Christmas adventure, and it just feels like they tried harder on the first one.
Okay,
and then they did on this one. This is your base. I mean, it is your basic Christmas story theme. Somebody has to save Christmas. Christmas is not going to happen. Superman has to help save it. Santa Claus is involved. I like that Santa Claus is willing to destroy all his furniture and even his home gather materials to make toys. I like that.
He's got a job and he's going to succeed at that job regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. And while the stuff that when they refer to the Japanese in a certain way or depict them in a certain way, I'm not a big fan of it, but that's war as hell. Right. I mean,
And it's not like this was the only English American comic book that, you know, these creators were the only. It's like, no, anywhere, even as an ally to white American characters, the Pacific and Eastern and Far Eastern peoples were not treated well. They were not depicted well. They were not, you know, so it's even our quote unquote friends, we insulted them, much less people that we considered enemies at the time. So it's,
I mean, especially when you extend that to the, I mean, you can only call them concentration camps we had in America where they rounded up all the Japanese Americans. That, But, it was fun. It's all right. The gnomes or the dwarves reminded me a lot of somebody that I've seen on an old Bugs Bunny cartoon that pestered Bugs Bunny for a while. But I think he may have been either a gnome or he wasn't Marvin the Martian. It was before Marvin the Martian.
You don't mean that little gremlin, dude, do you?
Maybe, yeah. Was there a gremlin?
Yeah. That guy, he was, it was also a wartime cartoon.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he was, I think the one I remember is, was that the one where Bugs Bunny used like air brakes and stopped a plane that was crashing right before it hit?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I forget what he was doing. He got caught on a,
so he looked at the camera and he goes, air brakes.
On a plane, and there was a gremlin, and the gremlin was causing the problems.
That sounds familiar.
I could also be conflating, I mean, all of those Bugs Bunny in a plane.
Yeah.
World War II cartoons would have been very similar. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Anything else you want to say about this? Well, you know, I'd like to talk about the art. We don't know who the artist was on it. I wouldn't even try to guess.
No.
It was fine. I guess you'd say, I mean, I always, whenever I look at art that I'm not immediately thinking, oh my God, this art is amazing. The first thing I do then is go, well, did it take me out of the story in any fashion? Could I follow the panels? Did they depict anything that were it not for the text, I wouldn't understand what's going on? And so the art did its job. Got no problem with the art.
Now, I will say on the bottom panel of the page that you're showing here, that captain's face, I thought, was very cartoonish.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Very, like, Sunday paper news strip cartoonish. And that kind of stood out to me because you see Lois and Clark right here beside him, and they look like Lois and Clark have been looking for the past however many years, you know, we've been reading in real time. But that captain, I was like, wow, they really deviated from the realism to the more cartoony for whatever reason. I don't know.
It's got very like Orphan Annie kind of face with just the dots for the eyes. And
makes me wonder if there was a comic strip out there and they were alluding to the fact that this is the same character as in one of the comic strips to make some sort of connection. Because there were, at the time, there were a lot of oceanic flying plane type adventure comic strips. Now he doesn't look like a main character, but he looks like he could be the comedy sidekick because of the way his face is drawn.
Yep.
For some, you know, chiseled adventurer thing.
Yeah.
So that really struck me here and a couple other places that he was drawn. He was drawn the same way, and I thought, huh, I wonder why they chose that styling for that particular character. So I don't know if that could be an indication for someone who knows more about particular creators that they would be able to look and say, oh, well, that's so-and-so, you know, that's the way they draw.
Yeah. If anybody knows who the artist was and, or could take a guess based on what they're, because good Lord, I know a lot of people, we both know people that can just look at art and go, oh, that's.
Oh yeah. That looks like so-and-so. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it'd be interesting to know. All right. I guess I'll wrap it up then.
All righty.
In our next episode, Patricia Randall's engagement to the suave but sinister Count Burgak detonates into a pulpy gauntlet of impersonation, graft, and death-defying cliffhangers, while Clark Kent races to untangle the mystery. That's coming up on episode 94, when Ed and I take a look at the plot of Count Burgak, the fourth and final Superman tale that appears in Superman number 11, published by DC Comics in May of 1941. So until next time, folks, I'm Steven, that's Ed, and this was the Superman Super Show. Thanks for listening.
Ciao.
We
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out somanypodcasts.com or use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.